calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Back in Ben, we're still in 1988, but we're moving ahead to March. Actually, before we start, I'm Elio, he's Ben, and we're gonna take the DeLorean. Ben, I said we were going back to February 5th, right?
Yes.
No, we're gonna go back even further than that. We're gonna go back to Saturday, October 3rd, 1987.
Okay.
Now, I've never seen an episode of WWF Saturday Night's Main Event ever. Like, when it was on.
Yeah. Because
I could never really stay up to watch it at 11:30. So I always had to watch it the next
day. Little Elio needed his beauty sleep, I understand.
Well, so... So I had to watch it. I had to borrow my neighbor's tape. That's how I got to see the Ricky Steamboat Jake Snake Roberts match that didn't take place. So on this particular Saturday, actually, I didn't even know there was a Saturday Night's Main Event if I hadn't watched Wrestling Challenge earlier that day at 12 p.m. I sat down, had lunch, and watched wrestling. That was my Saturday. I loved it.
That sounds good to me. I can deal with that.
So I sat down and they announced that would be Saturday's main event would be taking place that night. So of course my parents were going out to a party. I think it was either a party or a wedding or something like that. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm gonna stay up and watch Saturday's main event. I'm not gonna fall asleep. I'm gonna stay up. And I did. So the first match was Randy Savage versus a Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental Championship.
Okay.
So it was Savage defeating Honky Tonk Man. However, he didn't get the championship because of the way it took place. So first of all, let me just... Okay, so first of all, this main event took place in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So Savage defeated Honky Tonk Man by disqualification because the Hart Foundation got involved. So there was a 3-on-1 with Honky Tonk Man and Hart Foundation triple teaming Savage. Then of course Elizabeth got between Honky Tonk and Savage because he was gonna smash the guitar over Savage's head.
Right.
So she got in between them, but he just shoved her to the mat and she slid out of the ring and went to get help. So a couple of minutes later she comes back out with Hulk Hogan and he runs in, clears the ring, then he bumps into Savage. And then they're standing there looking at each other. And Elizabeth explained to Savage what was going on. And then they shook hands, and that was the formation of the Mega Powers.
Yes, I believe I've seen that.
Yes.
Because I remember Elizabeth getting shoved to the mat specifically.
Yep. So like I got to see that when it happened. Because I said I wasn't gonna sleep. I was gonna stay up and watch it.
You lucky little bitch.
So after that, this is a really creepy part. The face that Hogan made like in the back when they would shake hands, he made like this like really weird cringeworthy face. So the Mega Powers are formed. Now we're gonna go to February 5th, 1988, Indianapolis, Indiana, the Market Square Arena. Hi, Clay. Sorry, you're still not here.
Holy shit. That's hilarious.
Okay, we're in the Market Square Arena. We got Hogan and the Savage because remember at the Royal Rumble they signed the contract.
Right.
So the match took place. We have the twin referees, Dave and Earl Hebner, in the ring at the end. This is the end where Earl Hebner made the count. Now, I had the magazine that explained the whole story, like the way they made this story was like pretty cool because the way they explained it was Ted DiBiase had gotten to the arena earlier that day.
Okay.
He met Earl and he paid Earl. So that night before Dave Hemmer could go out to the ring for the match, Earl locked the dressing room. Locked the door from the outside so Dave couldn't get out. Earl was in the ring officiating. That's where the whole match fell apart with Andre defeating Hogan for the championship.
Right.
So after that, and you're probably thinking, why is Ted DiBiase aligning himself with Andre the Giant?
Well, given what I've already seen, it kind of makes sense. But had I not seen it, I would be asking the question.
Okay, but like even before WrestleMania 4, you're probably wondering why he aligned himself with Andre.
Yes, sure.
Because, okay, now when DiBiase came into the WWF, he forever kept trying to buy the championship from Hulk Hogan, kept offering him money to like sell the championship to him, right? And
Right.
Hogan kept saying no. So DiBiase wouldn't stop. So what he did was he aligned himself with Andre the Giant and he used Andre to get the championship off of Hogan. So once this match to go ended, Andre the Giant was a champion. And that and seconds later, he surrenders the title to Ted DiBiase. So now you
Right.
think Ted DiBiase is a champion, right?
Well, logically, yes, if
Not
that
so
was the
fast,
agreement.
because the following day we had an announcement from our very special guest, President Jack Tunney. So, Mr. Tunney, what do you have to say about everything that happened on the main event?
February 5th, 1988 will go down in World Wrestling Federation history as a day of infamy. Never before has there been such controversy to surround a World Wrestling Federation championship match. Despite having viewed time and again videotapes of the Hogan-Andre match, the decision of the referee is, as always, unfortunately final. Therefore, Hulk Hogan is not the World Wrestling Federation champion. However, it clearly states in the rule book that in order for a wrestler to be deemed a champion, he must either pin the reigning title holder or make him submit. That is the only way a wrestler can become champion. Therefore, unequivocally, I can state that Ted DiBiase is also not the World Wrestling Federation champion. Furthermore, it also clearly states in the rule book that a reigning champion may at any time in his tenure end his reign by publicly surrendering the title, which is exactly what happened when Andre the Giant presented the championship belt to Ted DiBiase. Therefore, Andre is also not the champion either. It is my decision that to be fair to the last two reigning champions of record, Hogan and Andre, and to furthermore be fair with the number one contenders who would have faced either Andre or Hogan as champion, I now declare the title vacant, and this vacancy to be filled on March 27th of this year during WrestleMania 4 in the form of the first ever World Wrestling Federation Championship Tournament. In this championship tournament, the last two title holders of record, Hogan and Andre, will justifiably be given a bye for the first round of competition. They will not compete in the first round, but will face each other in the opening of the second round of the tournament. The pairings have been completed for the first round of the competition, and they include Jake the Snake Roberts meeting Ravishing Rick Rude, Don the Rock Morocco taking on Dino Bravo, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat will wrestle Greg the Hammer Valentine, Randy Macho Man Savage goes against the Natural, Butch Reed, Bam Bam Bigelow against the One Man Gang, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan will take on the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. It is my sincere wish that all of the participating wrestlers in this historic tournament, and more importantly, all of the fans of the World Wrestling Federation, construe my decision as the only just and fair way to determine who will be the new undisputed World Wrestling Federation champion. Thank you.
And that's where we got the championship tournament that took place at WrestleMania 4.
Well, but that helped clarify things, because I was just confused. I knew the outcome of everything because, you know, obviously I saw WrestleMania 4 last night, as a matter of fact, but just because of history and knowing my shit, doing my research ahead of time, as so many of our wrestling POV listeners should do before they vote on these motherfucking things, so I kind of had the basis to get that clarity as to why, I'm thinking to myself, you know, why would Andre the Giant voluntarily give up the championship for, Ted DiBiase? Because originally I was thinking, well, what does DiBiase have over Andre that he can sway him to that degree? So, but that actually really helps with that.
So there is that. That explains everything. Ben, why don't we get into WrestleMania 4 from Atlantic City, New Jersey? All right, and we are live in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Local time is 4 p.m. Eastern. And we are at the Boardwalk for this
Plaza, nonetheless.
For this championship tournament that is, as far as I can tell, it's made up of random wrestlers that have absolutely nothing to do with each other at all.
Yeah, and in addition to that, folks, also while this tournament is going on, we're also having other matches interspersed that have nothing to do with the tournament. So, you know, every time one of those matches happen, it's like you have to reset yourself, like, oh, this isn't part of the tournament at all. So it was just the way that I would have preferred it to happen is do all of the matches that have nothing to do with the tournament first, and then go on and have the tournament matches. Like, to me, that would have made more sense.
Yep.
And made the card more linear to follow.
So Ben, was this show happening for you? I swear, if I have to hear that word one more time, Girl on Two was getting on my nerves. Every I don't know how many times he said it, it's a happening right here.
Yes, well, I was messing around with you on one of the recent shows. I'm like, every time he said that, if I had to take a drink, I would have been drunk off my ass by the end of the night. And again, that was true here.
Oh, man.
But to be honest with you, the more and more that I watch of these early shows, the more fondness that I have for Gorilla Monsoon in general. You know, because I really like the combination of Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura, and I also have a deep appreciation, obviously, for the tandem of Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. I really don't have anything negative to say about Gorilla Monsoon.
No, I just thought it was so funny. Like, he kept saying it was getting on my nerves. It's happening. Stop.
Yes, exactly. Precisely. But, you know, it just before we get into these matches, you know, I was texting Ellie back and forth last night, you know, trying to understand, like, the background of some of these things because...
Yes, do you still have your questions? Because I will answer them on this show.
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, let me pull up the the string of text from last night because it'll help me track the questions that I have.
So while Ben is doing that, I'm gonna start by saying WrestleMania 4, the celebrities we had here were Vanna White. We had Bobby Uecker, who was getting on my nerves because this guy was just really weird and weird placement to have him at this event second year in a row because he was at WrestleMania 3 as well. And of course, they had Robin Leach, who for some reason he brought him in to read the proclamation that prior to the start of this tournament.
Yeah, and you know, in relation to Vanna White, that whole thing was annoying.
It was. Freaking Bobby Uecker, I didn't realize just how annoying Bobby Uecker really was. I mean, do you remember a television show called Mr. Belvedere?
Yes.
Okay, he played the father on that show. So that's, but he also had a career in baseball as well,
That's what I know him for, because I'm a big baseball guy.
So he had a career in baseball, but he was also on Mr. Belvedere. He was also an actor. But yeah, this guy was getting on my nerves with his whole ridiculous trying to find Vanna White the whole evening. He was like looking for Vanna White.
Yeah, and not only that, but Jesse Ventura was getting in on it because he was like, oh, I have a date with Vanna White or whatever. I'm like, you know, it's like you can't get away with that stuff today because, you know, they were making all sorts of sexual comments throughout the evening. I'm like, you know, and I'm not Mr. PC, you know, despite the name of this podcast, but it's just, even I was like, oh my God, that's not good.
And we got a Barry Blaustein reference. And Ben, do you know who Barry Blaustein is?
I probably do. I just need reminding.
He is the director or the producer of Beyond the Mat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we had an early Barry Blaustein reference even years before Beyond the Mat.
Yes, and I'll tell you what, that's a depressing documentary if you really think about it. My God.
I saw it when I first moved here to this house.
Yeah.
I was still at the library and I saw it on the shelf. I checked it out and I brought it home and watched it.
Yeah, specifically the Jake the Snake Roberts part. That was really bad.
All right, so do you have your questions?
Yes. So first of all, first question was why didn't the Rick Rude and Jake Roberts match have a definitive ending? Because like within the context of the tournament and it being for what it was for, It wouldn't make any sense to have a draw.
Okay, very good. So let's go through these matches one by one, and as we get to that match, I will give you the backstory of that.
Okay.
All right. So the first match was the Battle Royal, which this was just weird.
You know
what was the point of this? Like, what did that trophy do for the winner? I don't understand.
Well, you know, it's not that it was particularly bad, but given what the whole entire evening was about, and the fact that we had so many matches, because, you know, let me pull it up. I think
there's 14 matches.
Yeah, there's 14 matches on this card, which even back in 1988, it's fucking ridiculous. It's fucking ridiculous in 2023.
Sorry. There's 16 matches. The 14 is the tournament alone.
Well, I mean, when Tony Khan has 15 matches on his card, I call it ridiculous, and I would call it ridiculous even back in 1988 for this tournament.
And Ben, this is the first ever 4-hour WrestleMania. Because it started at 4 p.m. It didn't end until 8.
Well, and on the network, it was listed as 3 hours and 34 minutes.
So, and yeah, around there, like 7:38.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that going into it. I should have, because what ended up happening last night was I watched WrestleMania in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched Monday Night Raw in its entirety. So I was, ask me what time I got to bed.
What time did you get to sleep?
5:30.
What?
5:30 a.m.
What time did you wake up? What?
I was so tired. I woke up at 4.
4 p.m.
Yes.
Ben?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it appears that I am co-hosting the show with the zombie. Because, Ben, what the hell?
Well, you can't say that I don't do the necessary prep to do these shows.
Yes, you do.
But yeah, so it's not that the Battle Royal was bad. It struck me as unnecessary. And number two, you know, you said earlier, what exactly was on the line?
Yes.
For this, so, you know, what was Bad News Brown's prize? And also, if I can be really nitpicky about the about one particular aspect of this Battle Royal,
okay,
that legitimately pissed me off, because they made Bret Hart, and we all know what a legend Bret Hart is, they made him look like a stupid dumbass. Because
how do you mean? At the end, like at the end?
Yeah, because he thought he had a partnership with Bad News Brown.
I'll tell you the story in around that one.
So that's another question that I have, because he came off looking really stupid, like they were gonna split the prize purse, and then of course, you know, Bad News Brown lands a kick and then tosses him out of the ring for the victory, but big whoop, you know, because what was the prize? Because it would have, you know, what would have made sense for that Battle Royal, if it was a last chance Battle Royal to enter the tournament for the WWF Championship. That would have made perfect sense given what was on the line that evening, but no. Instead, it was a stupid trophy that got wrecked within 45 seconds of the ending of the match.
So here's the thing. So Bad News Brown knows the Hart family well, because they were, he was in Calgary Stampede Wrestling. So he knows the Hart family, but yeah, and then the story around this was could Matthews Brown be the newest member of the Hart Foundation, which everyone knew that wasn't gonna happen. But it was just really weird and stupid and made Bret Hart look dumb because first they're like high-fiving, then Matthews hits the ghetto blaster to the back of the head.
Exactly.
And throws him over the top rope. So that really didn't make sense. It just made Bret Hart look stupid. Because no one actually thought Bad News would join the Hart Foundation.
Exactly. So that was my first pet peeve of the evening.
Okay. So does that answer your question?
Then, yes.
All right.
So then we have, let me pull my card back up.
We have the first match, and we have the opening match in the first round of the tournament.
And this was
Ted DiBiase defeating the winner of the 1988 Royal Rumble, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
And Elio, you gotta help me here. I know that this is the '80s. I know it's a different time.
Yep.
But my God, you're gonna have the opening match of a prestigious tournament, and they were rightfully putting this over as one of the most prestigious tournaments of all time because it was the first time that a new champion would be crowned as a result of a tournament.
Yep.
So you have this, and in less than 5 minutes. Now,
5:02. Is the time I have here.
Well, actually, the official time that I have is 4:54.
Okay. Well, yeah, still 5 minutes, but still, yeah.
You know, I really need to understand, you know, why they would do that to open up a tournament of this magnitude, because it doesn't make any sense at all.
It was really stupid because Hacksaw went through the ropes to grab for Andre, trying Andre just hit him with the right fist, and then DiBiase from behind getting the win.
Exactly, and you know, we talked about Bret Hart looking stupid. You know, who's dumb enough to go after? I don't care. If Andre the Giant was sleeping with my wife.
What?
You know, let alone hug my boot. I don't think I'm going after Andre the Giant. You know, to let him punch me in the face.
Right. I mean that was just weird. That was terrible, I think.
Let alone, you know, let alone Hacksaw losing focus that easily to lose his shot for a championship. Now,
I remember what I told you. Had things gone differently and they had the winner of the Rumble earning a championship match, we could have easily seen Jim Duggan in the main event of WrestleMania 4, which means we wouldn't have had this tournament to begin with.
Yes, and that would have made even more sense. Because, you know, if you guys watch our last show, we went over the very first Royal Rumble in 1988, which was won by Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He was actually, we drew numbers. Elio drew number 5, I drew 13, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan happened to be entrant number 13 in that match, so I won the lottery there. but at the end of the day, there was nothing on the line.
Nope.
So, you know, really, what was the point of it?
Yep.
And once again, just like the Battle Royal to start WrestleMania 4, where I said, you know, the winner should have gotten the last spot in the tournament, you know, it would have made perfect sense for them to do what they started doing in 1993 with the Rumble, which was the winner gets a shot at the heavyweight title.
Yes.
So Overall, this was just a very disappointing way to start the tournament.
And by the way, George Steele, who was in the Battle Royal, didn't even enter the ring once.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, and I can get this in before the first break comes up, because Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura were arguing over whether George Animal Steel had entered the ring, and I went back and I rewound it to see if he actually did enter the ring at any point. And he didn't. So not only did it, you know, make George the Animal Steel look stupid, but it made the announcers look stupid too, because it, you know, it's like, I think he got in the ring. No, he didn't. Then, you know, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, now obviously. George the Animal Steel wasn't the most cerebral of wrestlers, but even, you know, even so, it was just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's, I mean, and we've had situations like that. I forget what year it was, but Santino Marella did that stunt one time and then thought that he had won the Rumble, but then there was one more guy who tossed him out right after he thought he won the Rumble. I forget which Rumble that was, but it was a very similar spot to right here. But you're opening WrestleMania 4 by making some of your wrestlers look awfully stupid. Of course, Bret Hart being the first victim and George the Animal Steel being the second one. But it was just like, what?
And there were a lot of tag teams in this battle royal too.
Yes, there was. And just real quick, before we go to our first break, because the first two eliminations in that match, and this is how you know I was paying attention, because I don't take any notes while I'm doing this most of the time, and I didn't do it here. But the first two eliminations in that battle royal were Sam Houston and Sika. And I'm thinking, and first of all, Alpha must have been injured because he wasn't in there or something.
I don't think Alpha was even part of that battle royal, because this is a Sika single run. After the Wild Samoans.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because he did have a single run, because he also challenged Hulk Hogan for the championship in 1987.
I knew that because I had actually seen that one. That might have actually been for the MTV special that they did, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so that was part of his single run after the Wild Samoans.
But I mean, I was so pissed when he got eliminated second. I was like, the fuck. But anyway, before we get too deep into anything else. We'll take our first break, and then we'll really start getting into the nitty gritty of this tournament and breaking stuff down. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back, and we're gonna get into match number 3 or number 2 in the tournament, if you're counting along.
Yes.
And it's Don Morocco versus defeating Dino Bravo.
My God! Now I know these wrestlers are better than this. This match was absolutely god awful. God awful.
what'd you get from this one? This wasn't the greatest. I didn't really enjoy this one.
No, let me explain something to you, because not only was it less than 5 minutes. But there were at least 2 botches in there and a fuck finish. Because, okay, now, number one, he Morocco misses a big splash off the second rope. It's the kind of big splash that Jake Hager used to do in WWE.
Okay.
But this one ended like in an elbow drop. Mm-hmm. But he completely missed the entire thing, and even the commentary was like, he didn't quite get all of it. No shit. And I know it sounds like I'm being an ass, but it was that bad. Okay. And then there was another one, also by Morocco, where Morocco gets his neck trapped in the ropes, and the ref, who happened to be Joey Morella, who is the son of Gorilla Monsoon, if you didn't know, had to help him get his neck out of the ropes.
Well, Ben, do you know how Joey Morella died?
Yes, I do. He fell asleep behind the wheel and crashed into a tree.
But he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and Harvey Whippleman was.
Yeah, and it's very, very strange. I don't know why anyone wouldn't wear a seatbelt.
I don't know why anyone would drive if you're like that tired. Just like find the place to crash for the night.
Well, actually, when I was looking this up, now I don't know how true this is, but apparently it's as a result of his death, WWE instituted rules of like, you know, you have to like stay over or something like that, like start getting hotels and that kind of thing, and like, you know, you have to travel with somebody and all this other stuff. And that all was because of Joey Morella's death. I think he was only 31, so it was really a tragic situation.
Now, Ben, do you know why Jesse always kept calling Gorilla Gino?
Because that's his actual name.
Not many people even knew that. I was even wondering that when I first heard him say that. I'm like, why is he calling him Gino? I'm like, and then I was like, oh, okay, so not many people know that. He was actually calling him by his real name back then, which was rare.
So yeah, I'm surprised that Vincent put a stop to that.
Yeah, right, because it's rare for anyone to do that in that time.
Exactly.
All right, so is that all we have for that match?
Well, there's nothing else to say about it. It was that bad.
Okay, so on to the next one we have. Craig the Hammer Valentine defeating Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat bringing his son out with him.
Yes, the little dragon.
Yes.
Richie Steamboat.
Yes.
And for those of you that don't know, Richie Steamboat was actually in NXT back in...
Was he on TV? I was just about to say he was in NXT. Was he on TV?
I don't recall. I don't know that. I think I would remember that because I think that they would have made a big deal out of that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he was actually on TV or not. But it was around 2012, 2013.
I probably would have given him a stupid name.
No, they at the time he was still Richie Steamboat.
If they had had him debut on TV, they probably would have given him a weird name and a weird
gimmick. Yeah, along the lines of the Michael McGillicuddy. That was, oh my God, that was so bad.
How do you get from Joe Hennig to Michael McGillicuddy? What?
I have not a clue. You know.
By the way, still in the Royal Rumble, folks.
Exactly. Curtis Axel is still in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, let's go. how many other wrestlers has he thrown over the top rope?
I have no idea. Probably bordering on 1,000 at this point.
So we had Greg Valentine defeating Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Now, Ben, did you see that? Because I had to go back and watch this. Did you hear the chop said Steamboat delivered to Valentine, like out of the corner? I'm like, ow!
Well, and the selling that the hammer was doing for those chops was hilarious. I was laughing my ass off.
Okay, Ben. Who does it better? Who falls like a tree better? Ric Flair or Greg Valentine? I'm gonna go with Greg Valentine.
Well, I think that this is the only other time where I've seen the Ric Flair fall, and the first time it was done by somebody who wasn't Ric Flair. So I personally got a bigger kick out of the hammer doing it than I do Ric Flair.
He was hilarious. Like, he would just like be standing there staggering and then like just like fall over. Like, what?
No, but it was really funny because that was that he did the fall after like the second round of chops. But those were some of the most vicious chops I've ever seen. See, Eddie Kingston, that is how you chop, not the fucking,
not the way that you do, which is
not the fucking palm and shit.
Well, no, but see, and when he does it, he actually shows you, like, that how he's doing it. It's like just, like, tapping the guy with a chop. He's not even doing anything. There's no effect there.
But, like, I'm sorry. A chop is not when you put your entire palm on a guy.
Right.
You know? And I'm visually demonstrating to Elio how Eddie Kingston does his chops. I don't know why, but it's just like,
no, I've seen them, like, he had the white guy in the corner delivering chops. I'm like, that's not how you do a chop.
it drives me absolutely insane.
Rick Steamboat, if you're listening, can you please give Eddie Kingston one of your chops and show him how to do it?
Please. Please. It just drives me nuts. But actually, thus far at this point in the card, this was by far the best match of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the review that I'm using, this was the I'm pretty sure that this was the only match that got a 3-star rating.
Yep, or on wrestling, I'm looking at wrestling data to see that everything, they give it a 4.5.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense because at least there was something of substance to this match.
Yeah, I agree. This was one of the better matches on this show.
Yeah, and so next up was we're still in the first round here.
Yes, we are.
Butch Reed versus Randy Savage. And this, even though the match wasn't really notable, it should be noted that WrestleMania 4 was really the debut of a babyface Savage.
Yes.
And
going back to October 3rd, at the beginning of his match with Honky Tonk Man, he was still a heel transitioning into a babyface.
Right. And the thing is, the small little details that I noticed about Randy on this card was, after every match, him and Elizabeth would change outfits.
Yep.
Which I thought was just cool because it made, to me, like a little touch like that makes each match unique.
Yep.
Now, this was definitely his slowest match of the evening because Randy had to wrestle 4 times. Mm-hmm. And some of the wrestlers, even the ones that made it to the later rounds, didn't have to wrestle as much because they got byes. But we'll get into that as the evening progresses. But this was just a really weird match. I don't think Butch Reed was a good match for Randy Savage.
I'd like to know how these pairings were made, because these are odd, some of these matches,
Well, yes, and I'm glad that you bring up the oddity of these matches, because check out the next one. And for me, this is arguably the most disappointing match of the evening.
One
Since
Man Gang versus the Bam Bam Bigelow.
and yes, Bam Bam was still new. I get all that, but really, you're gonna have this match end in a count out in less than 3 minutes. I mean, way to make your wrestlers look stupid, and way to make the early stages of your world championship tournament not seem very important. Oh, I forgot, we forgot to get back in the ring, even though it's a fucking championship tournament. What the hell? There's really nothing else that I can say about this match because it was that bad. And when I give you these short reviews again, it bears repeating that we're still in the 80s here. So, but this is just like you legitimately, if you guys go back and watch this stuff, you have to like recalibrate yourself, because if you're watching this using the standards of modern wrestling or even that of the 90s, you're like, what the fuck is going on here? But yeah, this, if we were doing the traditional high points, low points, this would absolutely be a low point, because I was like, what the hell? Largely because I'm such a big fan of Bam Bam Bigelow. Now this is where my next question comes in.
What's your second question, right?
Yes, my second question comes in
Because
with
your first one was the Battle Royal.
yes.
Okay, what do you got?
So Jake Roberts versus Rick Rude as the first round continues.
Okay.
Now, on paper, this when I was doing my research prior to watching WrestleMania 4 last night, I was like, oh, this will be a good one, Jake Roberts versus Rick Rude, two of the best of their era. No, this. this was not a good match at all.
Ben has spoken. No.
if you'd assumed that this would be a good match, you'd be very, very wrong. I'm disappointed to tell you, because not only was this by far the longest match of the night, going over 15 minutes, despite the fact and despite the fact that these matches have a 15-minute time limit, I forgot to mention that. Somehow this match managed to go 15 minutes and 5 seconds. Now, you're wondering, oh, it's just 5 seconds. Well, if they were actually keeping track of the time and putting the urgency to get these wins, then we wouldn't have a fucking draw, you fucking nerds. As Elio was explaining to me, because I texted him like, what the hell is going on here? Apparently this match played into a larger feud between the two. And I get that, and to a certain degree, it takes this thing out of this match being a draw. But I must still ask you, and pardon me, Elio, for asking the obvious here. Why would they have a draw in a championship tournament?
Okay.
To this day, I will never understand that. because
go on.
It doesn't make any sense. One, it cheapens the value of the tournament, in my opinion. If people can't even keep track of the time to, you know, to move their ass to win the match. And number two, why wouldn't you want one of these two guys in the latter rounds of the tournament, even if they're not scheduled to win it, because it leads to higher quality matches. Certainly, I would have taken Jake Roberts or Rick Rude over someone like One Man Gang advancing later on in the tournament. What are your thoughts about something like that?
Okay, so I can't answer the time limit question because I don't know why they did that myself. I thought it was really weird to have a draw in a tournament for the championship. But I can give you the backstory on this. Now, Ben, are you looking at me right now?
Yes, I am.
What am I holding up right here?
You're holding up the match listing for WrestleMania 4.
No notes.
Absolutely.
All right, so Rick Rude entered WBF in 1987. He was, prior to that, he was in WCCW, UWF. He was wrestling in the territories managed by Paul Jones and in a tag team with Raging Bull Manny Fernandez. So I had never heard of Rick Rude until he debuted in 87.
So right.
88, he was one of the names they threw into this tournament. They paired him with Jake Roberts. Okay. This time limit draw makes no sense. So there's that. And this is what I believe is his first real feud with Jake Roberts. Okay, now, what is Rick Rude's finisher? Do you remember the name of his finisher?
The Rude Awakening Neckbreaker.
The Rude Awakening Neckbreaker. So after every match, he had started a custom where he would invite a random woman from the audience into the ring, and he would give her a rude awakening. Not the finisher, but he would invite a random woman from the audience into the ring, and he would give them a kiss. They call that the rude awakening.
Right.
All right, so one episode, this was an episode of Wrestling Challenge, he invited a random woman sitting at ringside, and normally they would never say no to him, but this one did. So he exited the ring, he approached a woman, and he was like, well, why are you here? To which she said, she's here to see your husband. And he's like, well, what does he do? Does he work the popcorn? Does he work in backstage?
Yeah.
She's like, well, he's a professional wrestler. And so he asked, well, who is this big, bad professional wrestler? And she said it was Jake Roberts. And so that was Cheryl Roberts. That was Jake's wife. So when he heard that, he started insulting Jake, and then she slapped Rick Rude.
Yeah.
So he grabbed her by the wrist. That brought Jake out, and a brawl ensued between Jake and Rick Rude. And so afterwards, Rick Rude had tights custom made with Cheryl Roberts' face on the back.
Yeah, were those the ones he was wearing in the match?
Yeah. And what Jake said is, Jake warned him not to wear them, because the next time he wore those tights, Jake would rip them off of him. On another episode of Wrestling Challenge,
I would hope
not. On another episode of Wrestling Challenge, Rick Rude wore those tights. Jake ran out, ripped them off, and he was like, he had to exit the ring wearing nothing. He like completely stripped Rick Rude.
Oh God.
So what, well, they had to put the black circle over Rick Rude as he was like flailing around the ring trying to get out and get back to the back.
Well, thank God I didn't have to see that.
So, well, you wouldn't have seen anything because of that black circle they had on Rude. But yeah, Jake warned him, you wear those tights again, I'm going to strip them off, rip them off of you. And that's exactly what he did. And so from this match is how that is where that feud began.
Oh, okay. I never really liked it when they bought people's actual lives into things.
And I did that off the top of my head, fans.
I know this guy is legitimately an encyclopedia. I mean, for God's sake, I would have had to look that up, and I have no problem admitting to you when I have to look shit up.
So that answered that question?
Yes, very much so.
All right, what do you got next?
So the next match is let's see here, what was it? Okay, Hercules versus the Ultimate Warrior.
Yes, the special was stupid, not good at all.
And I remember the answer that you gave me while we were going back and forth, because my next question, and I'll read this to you because this is how confused I was. So for comedic value, I'll read my exact phrasing of the question.
All right.
I said, Professor, I require assistance. Why is Ultimate Warrior and Hercules on the card when there's nothing on the line? So this is one of those matches that have nothing to do with the tournament. It's just a singles match between Ultimate Warrior and Hercules. And apparently, according to Elio's response, he said that, well, first of all, he said that even he'll have to look this one up. So that tells you that it was really random if Elio doesn't know anything about it off the top of his head. He says, I'll have to look up info on this one, but I believe this feud was along the same lines as Hercules versus Billy Jack Haynes. And then he comes back to me later on and says, according to what I'm looking at, this was Ultimate Warrior's first feud in the company because he had recently debuted in 1987 alongside the likes of Rick Rude.
Yep.
But you know, it was just one of those. It was one of those things where, okay, if you're gonna have this match, remember how I said earlier, folks, that for linear understanding, if you're going to have matches that don't have anything to do with the tournament, do them before the tournament takes place, not after Robin Leach reads the coronation of the tournament.
Then I have a question for you.
Yes.
In a chain match, are you allowed to use the chain as a weapon?
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to answer your question here. So Ultimate Warrior debuted in 1987. This, him and Hercules, this was his first feud that he had just entered with Hercules. Now, remember, we had the main event on February the 5th.
Right.
Sunday, February 7th, on an episode of Wrestling Challenge, we had a chain match between Ultimate Warrior and Hercules. So both wrestlers tied at either end with a chain on their wrist.
Yeah.
They're having a tug of war. Warrior breaks the chain, okay? So this enrages Hercules. He goes and uses the chain on Warrior and gets disqualified, which makes no sense because if it's a chain match, why you get disqualified for using a chain?
Yes, that's like getting disqualified in a bull rope match when you use the bull rope. It's not
now that's in February. and WrestleMania 4 took place in March. So that's where this match came about. But it was still just random because
Yes, and it
the placement on the card, there was nothing there.
wasn't exactly a substantive match because it only took 4 minutes and 29 seconds, and listen to the finish of this match.
Okay.
So if you guys are 80s wrestling fans, you'll remember that Hercules' finisher was the full Nelson. Yes, well before Chris Masters had the Master Lock. Okay.
Yep.
All
Who?
right.
We don't know that name yet.
So yeah, that was Hercules' finishing maneuver. But did he win because of the full Nelson? No. They ended up both on the ground with Warrior on top of Hercules as he's trying to get out of the full Nelson, and he got a pinfall because he landed on top of him when they both fell as a result of being in the full Nelson.
That's
So
just that is such a stupid ending.
it was really dumb.
And Ben, I have a question for you. Now,
Yes.
this was a singles match, right?
Yes.
I have a question here. Why would you have a singles match on WrestleMania and a chain match on regular television?
Once again, that's a very good question because, if it was current day booking, the stipulation match would take place on the pay-per-view, and the singles match would take place maybe in the lead up.
Right.
Or if you're really smart, you don't do the singles match at all, and you just wait to do the stipulation match at the pay-per-view because it makes the match seem that much more important if they haven't faced off leading up to the situation. Or is that too complicated for Vince to understand? I don't know. But that's neither here nor there. The match itself was very, very bad and just
Yep.
not necessary. When we go over all of these matches, because as we've said, there's 16 total matches, 14 of which are tournament related. But at the end of this, I'm actually going to count the I'm going to go over the match card, and you tell me whether or not this match was necessary to have on the card, and then we're going to see how many matches that this pay-per-view should have had. So I think we can get one or two more matches on in before we go to our second break. So next up, we had the tournament quarterfinals starting with Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. Now, before we get into this should sound very familiar to you because obviously WrestleMania 3, Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan had their iconic face-off where Hogan was able to body slam Andre and tearing his back in the first place. Or tearing his back all to hell, which was the start to all of Hogan's back problems. I think he's had like 10 surgeries or something ridiculous. But you would think that this would be a big match because if you recall, at the Royal Rumble, they had the contract signing for this match and they made it into a very big
No,
deal.
no, no, no. Then the contract signing for the February 5th events main event.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, but so they do this again a month later, and you would think, okay, we'll just have the contract signing for WrestleMania and not the fucking, whatever the fuck, the main event. So if you'd have done it the way I thought they did it, it would have made more sense. So
Yeah.
even in my anger, I can book things better than WWE booked things
But
in the 80s. Holy shit.
you had a question about this, though.
Yes.
I mean, we can go into commercial right now, and I can answer your question when we get back, because we have to go back in time to take you all the way through the story, because it's not going to end here.
Okay, very good. So we will, instead of starting a history lesson on this side of the break, we will start it on the other side of the break because we are intelligent.
I mean, we have 7 minutes, but I want to take you back through the entire Hogan Andre from like 87 and onwards.
Okay, very good. So we will take a strategically placed break right here. And we will be right back with a history lesson with Professor Elio Canella. We'll be right back. And the professor has completed his lesson plan. He is pulling down his projector. He has his laser pointer ready. He is ready to give me the entire history lesson between Hogan and Andre. And I am prepared. Where's my notebook? God damn it. Oh, well, I was more of an auditory learner anyway. Elio, take it away.
All right, so we of course everyone knows the all the events leading up to WrestleMania 3.
Of course.
All right, so Hogan and Andre have been feuding for the rest of 87, going to 88. Of course, on last week's episode, we went over the Royal Rumble, where they had a contract signing for their match on the February 5th edition of the main event. And of course, all the controversy around that match leading to this championship tournament we have here at WrestleMania 4. However, Hogan and Andre are not done yet. This feud will continue, which is the reason, which is the reason for the stupid result that we got in this match. Because
I was so pissed off.
now you already know Andre is with DiBiase and Hogan and Savage are the Mega Powers.
Correct.
Ted DiBiase will not give up on the WWF Championship, and I believe I was reading where at a live show. This was not recorded, but I thought I read where DiBiase did win the championship at a live event, but it was never officially recognized. I could be wrong. I have to look that up again. But DiBiase is not done going after the championship because now he wants Savage. So now, from Honky Tonk Man, Savage is now in a feud with DiBiase. And the event. There and the events going from April till August will lead up to the conclusion of the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks at SummerSlam 88.
Which coincidentally is the next event we'll be covering.
And there is where the Hogan Andre feud ends. So this has been going on for almost a year, or almost over a year.
Absolutely. Well, and it was a big money feud.
Yeah,
I mean these.
but the sending was stupid.
Yes, absolutely. And even the reviewer that I'm using said that this match did not have the historical context of WrestleMania 3, so it was kind of less important. And one of the things that I noticed, and this is not me going after Andre. But Grillo was saying how good Andre looked, and I didn't think he looked very good. So he may have been suffering from, the mobility issues even then.
He was already wearing a back brace at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, so I mean that poor guy. Can you imagine? I swear I'm not being a smart ass. I'm very sympathetic toward Andre the Giant. I mean, the pain that man must have been in must have been absolutely excruciating.
Do you know that he was on an episode of on an episode of, I want to say, either The Bionic Woman or $6 Million Man in the 70s.
I did not know that.
He played Bigfoot. Seriously. That's, they brought him in for that role on one of those shows.
I don't like that. That's not necessary.
Yeah, I mean that.
That's just, I don't like
it,
that.
It was weird. I don't know. I never saw the episode. I don't think I want to watch the episode.
No. I wouldn't either. And you but know,
did
you,
yeah, but did you see me in The Princess Bride?
Yes, I did.
That was good. I kind of like that movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Bigfoot. Come on now.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. But so yeah, this one was lacking. Talking about Hogan and Andre and this occasion. You know, but sometimes you can only strike gold once. So anyway, I think that's what happened here. So the next match was the continuation of the quarterfinals. And in this situation, the winner receives a bye to the, I believe, the finals.
Yep.
This was Don Morocco versus Ted DiBiase.
Mm-hmm.
Stone Cold would have been jealous in this situation had he been around that time, because the match ended after a stun gun, which no, this site is not risky. Get the fuck away from me. Oh my god, I hate people. Uh-oh. Jesus. Okay, I'm gonna get off of this. This is a
Ben, are you getting a red screen on your in front of you?
I have gotten that, but this one wasn't that.
Okay.
So something different.
All right.
But yeah. So yeah, this, I mean, there was really nothing to state of this match. You know, this tournament was really losing steam in the mid rounds, at least in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So but I you know, I understand why they did it. I just think that a tournament of this magnitude should have had a lot more compelling matches than it did.
Yeah.
So that would be my number one complaint, and this match definitely falls into that category. So let me try to pull the site back up. Okay, very good. And then I have to go all the way down again because whatever, I don't know. hang on 1 second. Right, okay, here we go.
All right.
You know, I don't think that this match really worked because Don Morocco and Ted DiBiase was such a clash of styles.
Again, nothing to do with each other.
yeah, so it was just kind of weird. And, you know, a lot of these guys weren't even toward the top of the card, so it was just kind of weird.
Yep.
The next one was Greg Valentine versus Randy Savage.
See, Greg Valentine, nothing to do with Randy Savage. It only Jimmy Hart because of the feud with Honky Tonk Man. That's it.
Exactly. And the only thing that I really liked about this one is they made Savage into the underdog because Valentine really got the lion's share of the offense. And then even though I hate roll-ups, God, I hate roll-ups, that's how Savage got the win on this one via like an inside griddle small package kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
This took place after Valentine tried to lock in the figure four. No, people, Ric Flair was not the only one to use the figure four in the 80s.
Exactly.
Jesus. I hear it now. That's why I said that. I just.
Rick
the
Valentine
figure
never...
four was Ric Flair. No, it was.
Right? Why do you have to make my co-host angry for?
Other people are allowed to use the figure four.
Right?
And for those of you that can't hear my sound effects, I was pounding my fist with indignation on the desk. Because I guarantee you, if this was wrestling POV, somebody would be writing into us. But Ric Flair was the only one to use the figure four. Fuck off!
Ben, I have a question. Do you know who the first person to use the figure four was, actually?
No, I don't.
It was the original Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers.
Oh, so Ric Flair stole another thing from Buddy Rogers. See, not only did he steal the Nature Boy nickname.
I'm reading this. According to various sources, including a Buddy Rogers biography, the original Nature Boy is the one credited as the inventor of the figure four. The move was used for the first time somewhere in the late 50s or in the early 60s.
Yes. Absolutely.
So there we go.
So learn your history, motherfuckers. Learn your history. But the Nature Boy is Ric Flair.
See, now you have my co-host making weird noises or they're uncomfortable. What's going on?
I can't help it. I have to use comedy to offset stupidity. But speaking of comedy, the Honky Tonk Man versus Brutus Beefcake.
Okay, Ben, hold on.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't like a big Brutus Beefcake fan. He was just there, like he was okay. Like I wasn't like a super fan, okay? But watching this back and watching his backstage interview,
I'm so
he was so annoying. Oh my god, his promos were bad.
He was so creepy.
Stop, kick a little off the top, maybe offside. Stop.
And actually, he did manage to cut Jimmy Hart's hair in this one.
And because of that, for a period of time, Jimmy Hart would accompany his wrestlers to the ring he would be wearing a beret to cover his horrendous haircut.
Well, I don't blame him in that case, because that. Clearly, Brutus the Barber of Beefcake is not a professionally trained barber.
Ben, I have a question.
Yes.
What are the scissors that Bruce Beefcake had?
The shears?
Aren't those hedge clippers?
Yes, they are.
I'm pretty sure you don't use hedge clippers to cut hair.
I'm almost positive.
I'm like, what is going on? Today I'm watching it back and I realized just how much I can't stand Bruce Beefcake. His interviews are terrible.
Yes, I agree. And this was not a tournament match. This was actually for the Intercontinental Championship, which at this point the Honky Tonk Man was still in the midst of his legendary Intercontinental Championship run.
Yes,
which would not end until SummerSlam.
Now, Ben, do you know when he won the title?
No, I don't.
All right. So, Honky Tonk Man defeated Ricky the Dragon Steamboat to become the new Intercontinental Champion on Saturday, June the 2nd, 1987.
Very cool.
So, from June 2nd of 1987 to August 29th, he held that title for a year.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. I'm reading something on WWE. I swear to God, these people are so stupid. But when did Ava Rain become a fucking authority figure on NXT? Okay, so earlier on in the what?
I don't know what you're talking about. Who's Ava Rain? I'm joking. Go on. Fans, we're going to take a detour and come back to the present for a moment. Ben, go ahead.
Ava Rain just put Lexus King in the NXT breakout tournament after he took somebody out on the latest episode just a few minutes ago.
Oh, for the love of God. And then now apparently Carmelo Hayes is in the U.S. Championship Tournament.
Well, that I'm good with, because I think that's a perfect spot for him. But Jesus Christ, Ava Rain does not belong making decisions. If anything, she's a authority figure for the women's division, not the entirety of NXT. Oh my
God.
Good God. What? And people ask me, why do you hate on the current version of NXT so much? This is why. Oh my God. I require assistance.
All right, well, Ben, now let me put you back into the DeLorean and we'll go back to 88.
Yes, please. I need to escape from this modern asinine bullshit.
All right, so we're on Bruce Beefcake and Honky Tonk Man. Do anything else on that?
Well, I will say I think that this is one of Brutus's better outings that I've seen. Okay. It says on the review that I'm looking at that this took place before his accident.
Yes, well, this was 88. I believe he had his accident in 93, I want to say.
Yeah.
Okay, Ben. Oh my God. Okay, you don't know about the barbershop. I mean, obviously you do with the Mario Schinetti thing, but I mean, the barbershop talk segment itself. Have you ever seen like a full episode?
No.
Oh, terrible. Like it just these talk. Some of these talk show segments that were trying to be Piper's Pit at the time. You can't do that.
Yeah.
All right,
it was just, oh my God.
All right, so what do we have next?
So the next match after this is, hold on, let me pull it up. Hold on. I was just looking up more info on Brutus's accent, and apparently it was in 1990.
Oh, okay. So even earlier than that, okay.
So, the next match was Bobby Heenan and the Islanders versus the British Bulldogs and Coco Beware.
Okay.
Now, I will say, yes, this match was random. However, I couldn't help but get the biggest kick out of Matilda.
Now, Ben, I have a question.
Yes.
Why do you say this match was random?
Well, it just, I understand the angle going into it. I'm saying it seems random. You know, if you read it, it's like the Islanders versus the British Bulldogs and Coco Beware. But so it to me it sounds random. But I understand that this was the blow off to a dog napping angle. Now, first of all, Matilda it was awesome. Before this match, the British Bulldogs are doing a are doing an interview, and I believe it was the Dynamite Kid that was explaining that Matilda was undergoing intense training of a particular sort during the lead up to this match after she's recovered from her kidnapping episode. She was undergoing weasel training. She was becoming a weasel hunter. They actually used the term weasel hunter to describe the revenge that she would take on Bobby the Brain Heenan. And it was, I laughed my ass off. Okay, now you guys know that I'm a dog lover because prior to him passing away 3 months ago, my dog Charlie was a longtime third co-host of this show. He would either sleep under my desk or completely stalk me while I was trying to do this show. And he would often do run-ins when he was displeased with my not giving him attention. Now, luckily, he never had to undergo weasel training because I never allowed dumbasses around my dog. But that's neither here nor there. But I do have a fondness when dogs are involved in the angles, and I thought it was absolutely adorable. The way that Matilda was up on the steps while this match was taking place. And I don't know who it was, but somebody was helping keep her there. They were like supervising Matilda during the match. And I swear, if somebody had hurt Matilda, I would have made a beeline to that person in the DeLorean and kick their ass. Because, you know, you don't put your hands on a dog. So I understand the blow off to this match, because I'm telling you, if somebody had, you know, hurt Charlie or, you know, kidnapped Pepper, you know, who's my current pug, you know, they would be dead. So I did appreciate the lead up to this match.
And do you understand the angle of that they did, like the how it came about?
I don't know how it came about, but I am familiar with the angle.
Here we go. So there was a match with the British Bulldogs, and I forget what team it was, but the Islanders came out to the ring. Ringside, where Matilda was in the Bulldogs' corner.
Yes.
And along with Bobby Heenan, and they kidnapped Matilda, and they walked back to the dressing room. Now, the weeks leading up to this match, so they kept showing special reports on WWF Wrestling Challenge about giving updates on Matilda's whereabouts and everything, and how serious they were about this. They actually set up a P.O. box where fans could write in get well letters in to Matilda.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that, because Gorilla Monsoon was giving us updates on the just the sheer amount of letters that had come in from that P.O. box.
Yes, like they literally set up a P.O. box where fans could send get well letters. Like, they were really running with this one.
Well, and that I can appreciate, because yeah. I'm such a dog person. And trust me, it's kind of like, you know, you don't care how many humans die in the movie, but if they hurt the dog, you can't watch the movie.
Yeah.
You know, you're familiar with that. You know, logic, right? So that's what this kind of reminded me of.
I'm gonna tell you what, there's one movie I will never watch that I can't watch.
What's that?
And that's Cujo.
Oh no, I've actually never watched that for that reason.
No, I can't watch that one. I'm not gonna. I won't watch that one.
Well, and good for you, because
Yep.
I wouldn't watch either. Like I have trouble watching Marley and Me because the dog dies at the end.
Yeah,
Like,
that was
I
hard.
can't, I can't handle that. Honest to God. But nonetheless, this was actually one of the more enjoyable matches on the card, because of the story behind it, and the Islanders wasn't Haku's most known tag team, but I did enjoy their work, so this was good.
Wait, say it again. It was one of his more well-known tag teams.
Well, to me, it wasn't.
Oh, well. So, I mean, this was actually his the first tag team he was with.
Yeah. But I knew him more for like the WCW
Right,
ones.
right, right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, this was ne next to Ricky and next to the Ricky Steamboat match earlier on in the evening where he bought Richie out. This was probably m my next highest rated match.
I'm sorry, I was reading up on Haku. Did you know he had a sumo wrestling career prior to professional wrestling?
No, I didn't.
So at the age of 15, he was part of a group of six teenagers and young men sent by the King of Tonga to Japan to study sumo.
I'll tell you what, he's had one hell of an interesting life, that's for sure.
Then Sione Vailahi, who would later become better known as Professor the Barbarian, was also part of that group.
Yeah, and for the longest time, I thought that they were related.
Yeah, so no, they were actually like friends from when they were like in their teens.
Yeah. I have such a respect for the Samoan dynasty in wrestling. I just, that when the older generations, such as the Islanders or the wild Samoans get their flowers, I appreciate it very much. But yeah, this was definitely one of my more higher rated matches in the on the card. And then prior to the main event tournament final, we had one more match. Which was Strike Force versus Demolition, who prior to watching this, I didn't realize that Demolition was managed by Mr. Fuji
Yeah.
at one point, which to me seems like the most random pairing ever.
Originally, they were brought in by Johnny Valiant, and then he turned them over to Mr. Fuji.
Well, I honestly did know about Johnny
Yeah.
Valiant and Demolition. I knew that.
Yeah. No, but then he turned them over to Fuji.
But doesn't that like objectively doesn't that seem like a weird combo?
Kind of weird, but it'll all make sense in about a year. No, later on in the year,
Okay,
it'll
very
all
good.
make sense. Like this was actually I enjoyed this match only because Strikeforce lost the belts.
Yeah, I was never really a Strike Force fan. Like even obviously I didn't see them while they were
Did you get what do you know how they got their name?
No.
Well, Tito Santana explained it to us. Because we strike with force. We are Strike Force.
Oh my God.
That's
I'm surprised WWE didn't sue the MMA promotion Strikeforce later down the road for the use of that name. Good Lord. That's hilarious.
I think they'd forgotten about that team by then, or maybe they just wanted to forget them altogether.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was never really a Strike Force guy.
No, as singles wrestlers, they were good. As a tag team, no.
And sometimes that happens. But then the main event was Randy Savage versus Ted DiBiase with Andre the Giant. Pardon me, but I always get distracted when Andre the Giant's out there because it's like I just enjoy seeing him so much.
See that one part where Savage is on the top rope and Andre is like on the outside daring him to jump?
Yeah, because he was like protecting DiBiase, and who would willingly jump into the arms of Andre the Giant? That's the most effective deterrent I've ever seen in my entire life. No, thank you. Please don't eat me. No, thank you. But yeah, this match was awesome, and well, not awesome in and of itself, because I think it was, disappointing, but in comparison with all the other matches on the show in the tournament, I think that this was the second highest rated match of the tournament. And then of course the final shot of the pay-per-view before we go off the air is a historic shot with Elizabeth up on Savage's shoulder. That is an iconic image in wrestling, and
Now, Ben,
yeah.
now when Hogan was out there, right?
Yes.
What I want you to do from now until April 2nd, 1989, whenever you see the Mega Powers together on a pay-per-view, pay
Yeah.
attention to Hulk Hogan.
Okay. And what am I watching for?
Because you're gonna see those. Right now, they're the Mega Powers. They formed in 87. In
Yeah.
89, the Mega Powers will explode. So
Okay.
you're gonna see the signs of Savage's heel turn coming.
Oh, is this where he gets jealous because he thinks Hogan is making a move on Elizabeth?
This is the beginning of. This is where it all starts. If you look at the way Hogan was looking at Elizabeth at the end of WrestleMania, just if you notice the way he looked there, that's what I want you to notice. Every pay-per-view that we do, pay attention to the way Hogan looks at Elizabeth.
Okay, well, even Gorilla Monsoon, the consummate gentleman, he was distracted by Elizabeth, which I don't blame him for at all.
Yeah, but I'm saying like. Pay attention to the way Hogan is looking at Elizabeth, and then look over at Savage. Okay,
Yeah.
you're gonna see. This is only the beginning of the heel turn.
I'm looking forward to this for sure. Yeah, I love these history lessons. That's why I'm so glad that we started doing this show. But that just about wraps up our WrestleMania 4 review. Rating wise, Elio, before we get kicked off the air, what would you give this in totality?
It was a lot of random matches with a lot of guys that had nothing to do with each other, really. So I'd give it like a 3.5 just for like the two or three matches that were kind of the high points for me. That being
Yeah.
the main event, the main event, and the Steamboat match, and what was the other one that we were saying?
And the demolition match.
That end of the ass and the mush match. So for those three, I'd give it a 3.5.
Yes, I would probably go a little bit lower. I would probably go like a 3.
Okay.
So, because there was just too much filler in there for me.
And
But
freaking don't bring Bobby Uecker back, please, for the love
yes,
of God.
because he was on WrestleMania 3 as well, but I don't think they brought him back for WrestleMania 5.
No, they
Did they?
didn't. Nope.
Okay. Well, that's understandable because I've had enough of him drooling over Vanna White.
Right?
But that wraps up our history lesson on WrestleMania 4.
Yes, Ben is minus 3 months old next week. He will officially be 2 months old.
Yes,
Welcome, welcome to welcome to the world, Ben.
and that will be the title for the next episode. But
Yeah.
until then, we will be back with the regular show on Saturday, and then I think we're gonna wrap up the year with our SummerSlam retrospective on Tuesday. Unless I'm mistaken, unless I'm missing something. Oh no, actually, because we have I'm sorry, we have the AEW World's End
Yeah.
pay-per-view. So yeah, so we still have a bit to go. Stop with these goddamn pay-per-views.
Seriously, we
I
want a
want to do
holiday, sir.
yes, and I want to do more shows like this because
Yes.
I don't know about you, Elio, but this is one of the most fun episodes that I've ever recorded with you. I felt like I
Yep.
learned a lot.
Yep.
So I appreciate that, and I hope that our audience enjoyed it as well as our retrospective series continues next week with SummerSlam 88. Until then, he's Elio, I'm Ben. We are the PNC Progression Wrestling Podcast. And here's the line you haven't heard in a while. If you can't find us, you're lying, because we're everywhere, baby. We'll see you next week.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.